This episode of the Inside Running Podcast is proudly brought to you by New Balance. The global athletic leader is proud to introduce a new premium stability shoe within their Fresh Foam X range, the Vongo V5. The Vongo V5 builds upon the success of the perfectly cushioned 1080 version 11 with the addition of an innovative stability solution designed for the perfect blend of support and softness. The Fresh Foam Vongo V5 is available now at select retailers and www.newbalance.com.
Pain. Now I hear you say you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin.
Welcome to episode number 197 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Thanks for giving us a bit of your attention. Big show. Don't think I've ever plugged this many results into our agenda before this episode. We'll be recapping the Olympics, thanking some Patreon supporters, Moose on the Loose, Good Listener Question, and going through our training weeks there as well. Welcome to my co-host down in Anglesey, the coach of Ali Pashley, Julian Spence. Welcome to the podcast, Olympian Ali Pashley.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's your claim to fame at the moment. Any new listeners have just tuned in for the first time. You've been inspired after the Olympics and watching these people on TV. We've got a coach. This is who
for the
he
moment.
Is.
That's I'm going to live vicariously through that forever from now on.
Yep, that's it.
That's all I got.
That's all you got.
How seedy were you on Sunday morning, Moose? Did you have much to drink Saturday?
Oh, I had a bit. Had some beers after the race, and then had a champagne with Joe, Sally's husband. He came over it was nice to catch up with him afterwards. It was a big relief for everybody that the race went well and was kind of like it was successful in terms of everything going right. And that was just like the biggest worry for me was that there would be a result where Ali didn't get what she deserved. And I feel like she did, so that was the relief.
We'll go into it all in detail a bit later on. Bradley Croker, my other co-host, and if you tune in for the first time, this is the guy that pays Sinead Diver in two of her workouts leading up to the Olympics. Welcome to you.
Thanks, Brady. It's a bit sad, actually. We've got a bit of the post-Olympic blues. It's been good the last 2 weeks, and like all that talk about whether the Olympics should go ahead or not, I'm certainly glad it did because it put a fair bit of positivity. Like I didn't look at the news for that 2 weeks in terms of like, you know, COVID stuff. And yeah, it was a great spectacle. And overall, Australia did really well, particularly in the athletics. So it was a great Olympics.
Great time to be a fan of Australian distance running, wasn't it? Like just every night you turn on the TV and you're like, oh, we've got someone in a semi or someone in a final or someone running a marathon up the pointy end. Like it was just spoiled.
Yeah.
Do you think it's because for so long we had like nothing as well? Like, so you appreciate it a bit more?
As in, what do you mean by we had nothing? Like
finalists at the Olympics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like we had some here and there over the years, but nowhere near like this.
100%. Like you just got used to seeing the Aussies go to the Olympics and often get run out in the heat. If they had a good Olympics, it would be run out in the semi, but to have finalists in, you know, so many events and having multiple finalists in the same event is just unheard of. So it certainly made it more exciting, and And also just because we get on here every week, and this is not to like plug ourselves, but I've been able to follow the athletes a lot more closely than I have previous Olympics, because I haven't done, you know, I haven't done this before, like previous Olympics. So I sort of know where all the athletes have been at in terms of their form and stuff like that. So that made it probably a bit more special as well to watch.
Yeah, and backstory. I got a lot of nice messages over the weekend and stuff as well, kind of thanking us for putting the show out every week. So, yeah, if you're here with us now, we appreciate those messages if you've written them in. Let's start with your week, Bradley. Take us through your recap, your Monday to Sunday of last week's training.
All right, just bringing it up. I wasn't sure whether we're going to go straight into results or all the weeks.
Thrown you, haven't I?
Yeah, thrown me. All right, so Monday would have been an hour run, I'm guessing. Yep, hour at 4:21s. Tuesday track session was 6x K off a minute sort of standing recovery. I didn't feel great warming up, just with my hip and stuff like that. But like session went okay. I pretty much ran between so basically went 308, 305, 307, 307, 306, and just kicked down the last one a bit, 257. So it was one of those sessions that I would say, like, on paper, it's like comfortably hard, so that you always have a bit left towards the end of the session. But because, like, I'm not really getting myself up for sessions at the moment, like, I'm rocking up and I'm doing them, but I don't have that sort of adrenaline pumping, and so, you know, the majority of this session actually still feels pretty tough just because you're not really up for it. But, you know, it was a good solid session. Certainly didn't empty the tank. Came away from it feeling pretty fresh afterwards. And then Wednesday felt really good, actually. 20K, 404s. Was one of the more enjoyable Wednesday runs that I've had recently, maybe because it wasn't sort of in the wet. I've had a lot of wet weather. Then Thursday, 46 minutes, 4:17s. And then Friday was like probably the worst session I've done in 7 months, I reckon. We went out to Stromlo, warmed up at sort of 9:30, and the warm-up felt like a session. I just could not, like, my hip just was tight, had no power whatsoever. So I decided that I would do the session with Tim, or at least start the session with Tim, who's like a 16-minute 5K guy. So the session was 2.5K, 2K, 1.5K, 1K, 500, all with a 500 sort of float jog recovery. So the aim was to try and keep the 500s to around 2 minutes, so 4-minute Ks. And, yeah, it was tough. Even starting off with Tim, like, we went like 8:43 or something for the 2.5K.
And close that was tough for you, like 3:28 pace?
Yeah.
It's not a good place to run fast, though, Stromlo, cross-country course.
No, admittedly, Stromlo is tough. And because I haven't been out there for a while, you realise how tough it is. And I find this sometimes, if you train in particular places all the time, or you do particular sessions, you just get used to it. And so when you then go back to somewhere that you haven't been to for ages, it's a lot tougher. Like, if I went back probably next week and did it again, it would feel much easier because it would be my second time at Stromlo in a short period of time. But yeah, so like 8:43, close to 7 minutes for the 2K, still felt garbage. And then, yeah, like, what, 4:48 for the 1500, and it's not even 1500, 3:17 for the K, 1:28 for the 500. By the end of it, it felt like a race effort, and would have averaged just under 3:30s for the whole session. And, like, to put it into perspective, I've only ever done this session once before, and it was probably 15 months ago. I ran the 2.5K loop in under 8 minutes, so like 45 seconds faster. I ran 6:20 for the 2K, and I ran 7 minutes. It was just one of those things. It's like, if when my body is just that locked up, it's just useless. You just got no power. Perceived effort goes through the roof. But look, I got it done. And then I went out that afternoon and felt like $1 million. Like, it's just one of those things that once I've done something hard and it's really sort of broken the shackles, I then feel good. So I ran 35 minutes at 4:05s, and that felt like just so much better than the morning. Saturday, I decided to put the heart rate monitor on. I haven't worn a heart rate monitor for ages, and I just thought, oh, look, I feel like I'm pretty fit at the moment. But then some of the sessions just aren't that great from a point of view of not, like, I don't really get up for them. And then sometimes, you know, my body doesn't cooperate. But yeah, like, I put the heart rate monitor on. I did an hour at 4:11s, and my average heart rate was 130, which, or 131, which, you know, it felt really comfortable. So that was a good sign. And then Sunday, I cut it back a little bit this week. So I just did an hour 45 at 4:03, so 26K. So it was still a week of another 130K week, one decent session, one rubbish session. Yeah, but, you know, I'm still ticking them off.
Still ticking them off, trying to trigger you, I reckon, Moose, with that low heart rate data. That's exactly why I put that heart rate monitor on.
No, I was just curious. I'm just like, oh, let's just see what my heart rate is actually doing. I won't wear it all the time. Like, I wore it again today, and it was 132s for 4:16s, I think. Like, training's good. As I said, like, I feel like I'm fit through consistency, as opposed to really, like, I wouldn't say any of my sessions over the last 6 weeks have been, like, super impressive or, you know, really got myself up to nail myself. So I think that's where my fitness has come, just through the consistency as opposed to super sessions.
What about
That's just how it works. Like, when has it ever worked that someone's done super sessions and found themselves fit?
Oh yeah, no, but you know how some people, when they're super motivated, can get themselves up for sessions. Like, I'm not that person at the moment. Like, I rock up to training on a Tuesday night and I'm just like, oh, fuck. Like, I really don't particularly want to be here. And a lot of it is because of just how shit I feel in the warm up with my body. And then, you know, I go, all right, I'm going to train with the group, which is what I did for five of the 6 1K reps. And on paper, like, me running 307, 308 should feel like super comfy. But when you're not actually up for a session, it's still solid. Does that make sense? Whereas if I was in a race situation, 308s would feel like I'm absolutely jogging, but it certainly doesn't feel like that in training.
Do you know what a hashtag does on Strava? When you do a title with a hashtag?
No.
Is that why your Strava's been different colours lately? Is that what happened?
I'll ask you about nothing. That in a second. Nothing happens when you use a hashtag on Strava.
Did Croach use a hashtag?
Yeah, old man problems.
Body 1 million times better. Hashtag. Yeah. Old man problems.
Oh, there you go. Hey,
it's proven another old man problem.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm like, this is a classic old man behavior. Yeah. You heard this anyway.
Anyway, training's good. Like, I'm just ticking things off. I don't know. Like, sessions feel hard, but certainly not not getting up for them.
Yeah, well, you just need to be in this maintenance stage anyway, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might not be racing in a while. Just keep it injury free. Keep ticking off weeks.
Yep.
Pump a long run.
Can you put your heart rate on for that one this week?
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Put your heart rate on for that.
I don't want to do that.
No, that's right. Probably 140.
Jeez, if you get 4:03 average at 140 over those hills.
Well, I went 4:03. Well, yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't have one. Aren't you doing
one? Went 130 for 4:11s for an hour.
Hey, tomorrow night, I've been checking the Diagony of the Feet Strava page, and you guys are doing Deke's Quarters, aren't you?
Yeah, we are.
Why don't you get yourself up for that? Try and run 14:40 for Deke's Quarters.
I reckon I'll go about 15 minutes. That's the goal.
Start with a 200 float, and then you get your 15.
He does start with a 200-meter float.
Yeah,
but then
you finish on the hard efforts. You still do 4.8K.
I always do it the other way around. I've had this conversation before.
But you can roll another 200 float at the end, you get your 5K.
I can, but the session's not 5K, it's 4.8.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah, have a crack at that, Croaks, I reckon.
My plan is to run between 70s and 72s for the 400s and 40 to 42 for the floats.
Yeah, that's under 15 minutes then. If you go 70, 40.
No, if you go 72, if I go like, if I start off, if it's more 72, 40, then that's about 14:55.
And then really rip the last one down.
We'll see. I haven't done a full Deeks quarters for ages because earlier this year I just did six of them.
Yeah, that's right.
And then did some 400s afterwards. Well,
didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, good one.
We'll see.
Moose, what have you been doing in your running life?
I ran my biggest week in forever that I can remember anyway. Not forever, but you know what I mean. Forever in this relevant training block. So I ran 112K and it was all pretty good running. Like I felt pretty good throughout the week. I'm just going to I've been too enthralled with Brad's week. I'm just going to get mine up. So on Monday I did 12K with Sugar and Footy Mate. And we ran just along the cliffs, cruisy. Wanted to keep it easy. And then in the afternoon, jumped on the mountain bike. So I got a single speed mountain bike, so no gears. And if you go and punch a few hills in that, then you feel it. So I did like an extra 30 minutes of, which is only 10K, but gee, or nearly 11, but gee, it's hard work. When you don't have gears going uphill, you just work and your quads burn. And my lungs were burning because I was breathing so hard. So I thought this is a nice little bonus points of fitness.
So do you have this bike because it's like hipster bike and you use it on the trailers?
Nah,
or why don't you buy an actual mountain bike with gears on it? Or is this a thing?
This is like a thing.
Okay.
So they're way lighter. If you don't have gears, it's like really simple. It's like you go out, you don't have to change gears. It's light. You don't have problems with all the cables and shit. You can just go, okay, here's a hill. You work harder. And then rather than if you go on a hill when like you have gears, you can just change gears like to make it real easy and you can just kind of spin up the hill. Whereas with a mountain bike with no gears, you're like every hill you have to work hard. So it's more of a workout. And I only go out for half an hour. It's good fun. And you like around here, we have some of the best mountain biking in the country around here. So it's pretty fun. I've got no skills whatsoever, but it's nice to sort of get some adrenaline going downhill.
Do you listen to music and stuff while you're going?
Nah, not cycling. It's a little dangerous, I think, to have music while you cycle. Okay. I've considered it, but yeah, you're on the road a little bit and you're coming around trails pretty fast. So I think you want to hear what's around you a little more.
Yeah.
But I've been listening to music running. The next day I ran Coal Mine Road, which is a pretty hilly road just out the back that goes along the coal mine, and ran out and back 6K out, 6K back. I listened to Nipsey. You know Nipsey, Brady?
You'd be a big fan. I don't know Nipsey.
Nipsey Hussle. That's his name, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you've got me, caught me off guard here.
He died. Good? Yeah, he's good. He's like full gangbanger.
American rapper. Well, he's got a nice little beard on him, hasn't he?
He's dead now.
Oh, rest in peace, Nipsey. How'd he die?
But he's got, he was shot, I think.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's got this good song, though. I forget what it's called. It's something like On the Grind. It's like Grinding All My Life, it's called. And I'm like, oh, this is a good running song. Just to go along listening to a bloke talk about how he's been grinding all his life. But off to work that day, Ballarat. Next morning.
Hang on, just on Nipsey for a while. Guess what the name of the shop was that he got shot at in front of?
The running company.
Marathon Clothing.
No shit.
Yep. March 31st, 2019, Hussle was fatally shot outside his store, Marathon Clothing, in South Los Angeles. He owned a store called Marathon.
Wow.
And
there
now
you
he's
go.
Got a marathon coach here listening to him.
He's pretty famous.
This is simulation shit right here. This is simulation stuff.
Yeah, right.
It could be.
And on that run, Moose, I was very impressed with the time that you ran before 6:30 and running near the coal mine. That was very much getting back to your blue collar roots.
You know, I was running along as the sun coming up, just listening to a bloke talking about hustling. I thought, this grinding away.
Yeah,
I need more of this in my life.
You're about to go on a lockdown the next day and you didn't even know it. Had to shut the shop. Yeah.
Day after, yeah. Thursday went into it. So Wednesday I was out still Ballarat, did a workout with Ferg, a fella I coach who is very fit right now. He was gonna do Gold Coast Marathon then he was going to do Sunshine Coast Marathon. Now he's looking at Adelaide Marathon, but we'll see.
Well, Adelaide and Shep on the same day.
Yeah, well, he might.
There's two options.
Shep's shut entries, I believe. Just waiting to see what happens there.
I think they opened back up, haven't they? Oh, I'm not sure. The news that Regional Vic got out of lockdown today must help that.
Must. And maybe that's where he ends up. He's too good for that shit, though. He could run real fast. He needs a good race.
I think Sheppy could run, like, it's bike tracks. That's the only problem. Like, not open roads, but it's still flat. How fast do you reckon he's going to run?
How much do I reckon he's going to run? I reckon he's probably... See, the problem with Ferg is he's... Okay. Yeah, the problem with Ferg is he's got a lot fitter without being able to race.
Yeah, one of those guys.
He's got this 230 in his head, whereas I reckon he's probably more like a 225, 226 guy.
Jeez,
But he wants to get a 230 under his belt, so he'll go out real conservative and just smash the second half. And maybe that's the better way to do it at a race like Shepparton or Adelaide, when there might not be a lot of people around you at that sort of pace.
Yeah, and he could have company if he goes out 230, not so much if he goes out 225.
Exactly.
And kick away and win it.
Yeah. At the Gold Coast, maybe he's more 225 type pack. But he was very fit. So he had a workout that went one set, 6 minutes at 3:45, 6 minutes at 3:25, and then a jog. Then he went two sets. I'm going to read out what he did, not what I did. Two sets of 4 minutes at 3:40. 4 minutes at 3:20, and then three sets of 2 minutes, 3:35, 2 minutes at 3:15. But I kind of messed him up because his watch fucked up. He plugged it in wrong, and so it was beeping at him when it shouldn't have been. And then I went and made him do 3 minutes instead of 2 minutes at the end. But he nailed it, and he did it comfortably, and I was just spluttering along next to him just where I could. I just bailed out of a few of these and jogged a bit longer. So I ended up doing the first 6 minutes, the second 6 minutes, jogged it, 2 minutes at 3:35, 4 minutes at 3:19, 4 minutes at 3:36, 2.5 minute jog, 90 seconds at 3:17, 90 second jog, 3 minutes at 3:35, 3 minutes at 3:16, 2.5 jog, 90 seconds at 3:14, 2 minutes at 3:29, 2 minutes at 3:10. So that is a mess of words and numbers right there. There is no way anyone knew what the fuck was happening. But
just needed a few hashtags, it would have been complete.
I'm looking at it now like, what? I don't even know what I'm saying. But it was a decent workout. He had a good workout. I don't think I helped him at all. I was just, he helped me. But it's nice to get back running with someone again. He was appreciated. He's the best runner in his group, so doesn't often have someone to train with. Yep, so that was my workout. Shitty weather, Ballarat, cold, raining. Next day, we were in lockdown by the next day, so I stayed close to home. Ran on a new trail out the back of Anglesey, super hilly. Kind of beat me up a fair bit, 333 metres in 12.8K. It's nice to just not worry about the pace or anything, but my heart rate was like real high for such a slow run. A lot of steep climbing, like in that type of distance, that elevation means you're going up a real steep hill quite often. Next day, did a loop around home, 13.25K, just an hour's run. Found myself, like, this was the day before the marathon, so like just riding some roller coasters right during this run. And then out on the afternoon I went for a bike ride and did 11.3k. next day was the run after the race, so that was just a super nice run. All the weights, like, feels like it's lifted, and just a relief that everything went well. And so that was a nice hour. And the next day I did like a hard long. I was supposed to do a workout on the Saturday, but couldn't get myself up for it. Just didn't really feel it after the race. So decided to go for a hard long run. and did 25K, 540 meters of climbing, and I think I averaged like 406 or something, which is pretty solid with that much climbing for me. I would have averaged a heart rate of like 160 for the whole run with a lot of time spent above 170. I was cooked by the end. I'd chafe like under my arms, on my back, down my hamstrings, in my groin. I had chafe everywhere. My arms were really sore from struggling. My upper back was sore from hunching over up the hills. I was just like, I was cooked by the end of it. That was a race effort right there. And so, yeah, that was 112K, I think. And now I'm back at it this week.
Back at it. You and I aren't racing this weekend, though, are we?
No, we're not. I don't think so.
There's no way that's happening.
We got a bit of a Surf Coast Track Club time trial set up down here on the Saturday instead. So I might go pace someone and just help someone out.
What are they doing? What distance?
10. Everyone was doing Albert Park, so it's sort of like a little replacement for that on Saturday, so we can still do a long run Sunday.
Oh yeah, that's good thinking.
Yeah.
Good to still do something, get together. Very good. Then you see what happens race wise.
Yeah, well, I can't see much happening, to be fair. I just Melbourne in lockdown, they're not going to put a race on just in regional Victoria, I don't think.
Nah, even, but there's got to be hope that Melbourne can come out of lockdown, doesn't it? And then like 2 weeks down, good. 2 weeks down the yeah. track, we're right again.
The numbers are up, but the cases are in the community. They're not in isolation. So I'm just not that confident about this one.
Okay.
But you're not talking to the right man here.
No, you're pretty good at this stuff.
Well, I'm not confident. And I'm just not confident. If you've got 11 cases out in the community for however long, 11 cases out yesterday for however long, with this Delta shit, that it just spreads too quick.
What about, explain to the overseas listeners, Moose, because the overseas listeners are probably, it's all opening up and stuff over there, and they're probably not sure what we're talking about while we're back in lockdown. Just give us a 30-second summary of Australia's COVID situation.
All right. Well, we were going okay for a while. We had the COVID under control, I reckon, until this Delta variant hit the country, escaped out of a quarantine situation. I think the first time it escaped was out of like in an Uber from the airport. They were taking or it was a driver from the airport. It was an overseas hostess going to a hotel. But anyway, the Delta variant got out.
30 seconds is finished.
Yeah, this ain't a 30-second thing. I've got to blame 100 people first.
All right.
But we're not vaccinated enough to be able to open up. So we're still going down through lockdowns, because if we opened up now with the vaccination rates as it is, our hospitals would get overrun with sick and dying people. And so we are still on the lockdown program, where once a case gets out and starts spreading, we end up in a position where business is shut. There's only like a couple of reasons to leave the house. And we do that until the cases get less and less and less, and then we reopen again until it happens another time. So I saw today vaccination rates in Victoria. If we continue at our current rate of vaccination as of today, we'll be 80% fully vaccinated. Oh, no, sorry. When I say fully, one shot, so one jab vaccinated by November 28th.
And can you open up after one jab, or you got to wait for two jabs?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know about that. But that's promising to me, because that means that we might not have to endure that many more lockdowns. I think the thing is we get to like 80%, and that's when we start getting away from lockdowns.
Which would be good. Well done. Good summary. And all the states hate each other. You probably should have said that.
Oh yeah,
New South Wales is very much divided.
Us, the Victorians, got like all the states were sinking the boot into us early when we were in lockdown last year, and now New South Wales, we're the king boot kicker, and then they're all fucked now, and they're doing 260 cases a day for like the last 2 weeks. They've prioritized the economy over the health or the case numbers. And so businesses have stayed open. Like, there's a lot of businesses that should be shut that aren't, and so the community spread is higher and they're not really getting anywhere with their lockdown situation.
And Croke is stuck in the middle, surrounded Croke's by New eight. South Wales.
Canberra's so good. Canberra's got
Canberra's
nothing
fine.
COVID doesn't like the ACT.
Julian's in Victoria and I'm on the border, so I'm Victorian when I want to be and New South Wales when I want to be. Race week, that's what I titled my run on Monday, 70 minutes. Thought it was going to be race week. That was 70 minutes Monday morning and then 8k in the afternoon. Tuesday, met up with Archie, we did a moose fartlek. Just took it a bit easy though because we were thinking we were going to race on Saturday and I wanted to do my long run on Wednesday as well. So we kind of floated moose fartlek, 3 minutes at like 3:05s, 3:07s, 1 minute jog, 1 minute kind of like just under threes, 1 minute jog, do that times five, get you 30 minutes. We covered 8.8K, which was okay for that. A bit windy, a bit cold, got it done, ticked it off. Then an easy jog in the afternoon on Tuesday, 7K at 4:38s. Wednesday, I did do a long run. I kind of went in one direction, out and back for half an hour to get an hour up listening to Road to Nowhere, and then listen to the Inside Jogging podcast for the second hour. Averaged 4:15s for 31k. Quite pleasant. Not a bad way to do it. Go an hour one direction, and then half an hour one direction and back, and then feels like you're starting another run going in the opposite direction. So that was good. And then I got out for 7k in the afternoon Wednesday. So really front loaded the week. I was picking up a stack of Strava followers, actually. You know when you like hammer the K's early in the week and you must be sitting on top of a lot of tally boards? You know what I'm talking about?
Do people still look at those tally
boards? I think they must, because I was picking up like 5 or 10 a day. I was absolutely smashing it. And then Thursday, this was, I still thought I was racing Thursday. I did 50 minutes easy. Oh, yeah, that's the day I saw. I had a dream about Stewie, actually, Wednesday night, and he bought a dog. Not sure what the significance of anything that was, maybe because he was a big dog, and then I saw a rainbow on my run, so I'm like, something's going to happen here, Stewie's going to win a gold medal, because we all know that gold's at the bottom of a rainbow. Thought there could have been something in that. Turns out there wasn't. We'll talk about that when we go through the results soon. And then a 7K in the afternoon on Thursday, and then we went into lockdown again. So, yeah, so my school went into lockdown, but because I'm regional New South Wales, not much actually changes for us on this side, so we can still have people over at our house and go to the pubs and cafes and things like that. But yeah, it kind of changed all my Victorian plans, I suppose, which is like 99% of our life, just not what's on my license. So that was a bit weird, knowing the race was then cancelled. School was back in remote learning, which is always frustrating, kind of hard to manage, and they didn't give us much notice this time. Like, I know it's hard for them to do, but yeah, I think the announcement kind of came at 4:30 and the kids had already gone home for the day. And then we kind of had to, get sorted for Friday. So on Friday morning, I trained with my iPod, actually, my old Mighty, the old MP3 player. Chucked that on, chucked the heart rate monitor on, just looked at the heart rate screen, just kind of did a tempo run. Every time my heart rate got close to 160, I chucked on the brakes, did that for 13K. And then in the last K, I did 30 seconds hard, 30 seconds float. For the last kilometre, ended up being 14K at 3:26s. It was good. It was good not having any pressure on, not having to look at any splits. And like, I like training for heart rate because you kind of get rewarded for getting your heart rate high and then you just get to back off. Whereas in most of my sessions, you look down at your watch, you're not going quick enough and you got to put the foot back down. So it was a fun way to train.
Is that your marathon heart rate, you think? Is that what you're going for?
I hope not, because that means I'm in like 2:26 shape.
No. So what was the idea of it? What was the idea of picking that heart rate?
Well, it was just, I think my threshold's like 167, around about there. And I think I can kind of do marathon stuff at about 162 to like 165. But I think this was a bit higher because I had that like 38K day on the Wednesday. So I think I was still a bit tired. But this was just a heart rate for me that I knew was easy, still felt like I was running pretty fast. Still felt comfortable, could kind of switch off a bit.
So what was the purpose
of this? Was, This was just to get out of the car and do something faster because I was pissed off that the race got cancelled. And I was like, yeah, just go do something for the sake of running a bit quicker. Because my whole program was like, yeah, well, what am I training for now? You know what it's like when things are mapped out and then, you know, get a spanner chucked in the works. And yeah, so I was just like, oh, I just want to do something that's not going to cause me much stress. I'm still going to be able to tick a box that I've done a workout. Because I'd never train with music or anything like that. So yeah, it was just a bit quicker. And I just wanted to stay away from hurting myself. So kept the heart rate right low.
People, I think, get too obsessed with sticking to like a heart rate zone as if they're not going to get any benefit from being like under threshold or under marathon pace, but not an easy run.
Explain that again.
So you hear this term all the time, gray zone, where it's like it's not easy, but it's not hard. And why would you ever bother training there? Which is kind of what you've done.
Yeah.
But I don't agree because I think you still get a lot of benefit from doing a run like this. It doesn't have to fit a certain heart rate zone. It's not like your body's like looking at like data. Like you're running along in a steady pace. You're still physiologically like testing your body in certain ways. You're working the upper edge of your aerobic system. And if you did this every day, it would be a problem. And then you could call it a gray zone. But I still think there's benefit to a workout like this. Not every workout has to be like full on hard threshold or has to hit a marathon pace or it has to be VO2 max or whatever. There are workouts like this that provide benefit.
And it's mentally refreshing as well.
Exactly.
It's kind of training at that 80% instead of 90, 95 and maybe cooking yourself. And you come away from it feeling like my cool down, I averaged 4:06 pace. Like I never averaged that pace because I'm like, oh, that didn't really do much at all. And it's like, I think I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. Like I just wanted to get a win, something on the board just for the sake of doing a workout. Yeah.
And this is where scientists don't, this is where the art versus science of running gets like hits butts heads a little bit, I think, because there's no way like a physiologist would write a session like this.
Yeah.
But an actual running coach would go, yeah, there's benefit in doing something that's just a little off marathon pace that might prepare you in the future to run long, steady marathon pace runs.
Hmm. And, you know, like when we're looking at this, it's only like 6 or 7 seconds a K off my marathon pace. And considering I'm doing it at, you know, 7:01 a.m., two days after a 38K day, like it probably is pretty close to marathon effort, you know. Yeah, so I reckon there's big benefit in doing stuff like that. Might do more of it. But, yeah, it was just to get myself out of the car when the alarm goes off. No, I'm going to do something that's not super hard and can get a win on the board. 7K in the afternoon, Friday night, 4:27s. And then Saturday after the marathon, so this was like 10:50, I just went out to the Balm of Pine Forest and ran around there by myself just thinking about how amazing it was watching the women's marathon that morning, super inspired. And then just went to like this place where I didn't see one other person in the middle of the forest, just with your own thoughts for a while, which was really cool. And then Sunday, because I'd already done my long run, this was one benefit. I didn't have to do that on Sunday. Watched the marathon, the men's one, and then went out at 20 past 11, did 12K, I think it was, and then just did some full gas strides out the front after that run, trying to get down to like 2:30K pace, just really full gassing them down the street. So that was good fun. Really enjoying doing those at the end of a couple of runs, or just one run a week. Getting on the toes, punching some pace. So that was 163.9Ks for the week. Fourth week at 160K, boys. But I'm going to turn things down now, I reckon, and just maybe do a croaker. Just hit 130s. Just stay away from injuries.
You reckon you're riding off Melbourne?
So hard, isn't it? Because I'm on the wrong side of the river here, the rule is at the moment that I can only enter Victoria for club sport. So I can do it, probably that means I can do the AV stuff, but I can't do, like, obviously if I do Melbourne Marathon, it's running that as an individual, like I'm not part of a club.
Hardly, That's in October.
I know. So I'm thinking, okay, so that rule will probably change by then. And there's been a big push because all the businesses are struggling up here because Echuca can't go to Moama, Moama can't go to Echuca, and we just rely on each other so much to, like, support each other, other than that for those six reasons that they're put into place. So I'm certain if we don't have any outbreaks here, which we won't because we're 7.5 hours from Sydney, hopefully they turn us less risk around having us, the people, because we're not allowed to go. It's pretty tight for us at the moment, so we can only go into Victoria for six reasons, but we can't go further than, I think it's like 50 k's north of Moama into New South Wales. So we're like in this little 50 k window at the moment, which is pretty sucks.
When do you think Melbourne Marathon would have to make their call by?
I don't know either. Yeah,
Gold Coast made it 4 days before.
Yeah, that was a bit that was obviously because of the outbreak happened right there and then, but, you know.
Sunshine Coast made theirs as well. That was like a week and a half out.
Like, do you reckon an event like Melbourne would, because obviously it costs a lot of money to close roads and to put these events on, and if Victoria aren't going to open the border to, say, Sydney, which a lot of people from Sydney would go down to Melbourne, would they just not bother running that event because it means that their revenue is going to be down because of, you know, people can't go, but they've still got to have all the expenses?
Yeah, but they'd still be able to get their field sizes with South Australia, Victoria, Tasmania, Queensland, wouldn't they? Yeah. I don't think they'd be too concerned to just miss New South Wales.
I think they could do it too. They'll be fighting hard to get it on.
Because remember, like, they're a year down after last year as well.
Yeah, putting the race off is not in their best interest whatsoever. Like, these guys will be doing everything to have that race go ahead.
But I know a lot of people are already making the call that they're not even going to bother with Melbourne just because of the uncertainty, especially for the marathon. They're just not willing to put in a 9-week marathon block with a chance of it not going ahead. So I know a handful of the people that have
Victorian
already
people?
Made that call. No, interstaters.
Oh, yeah. I think that'd be different in Victoria, though.
Oh, it's still the same. You still got to put in a 9-week marathon block. Yeah. Like, and with still a lot of uncertainty, like the situation you're in at the moment.
Yeah, but I'm a bit different. I'm on this other side of the border, though, so I've kind of got another hurdle I've got to jump as well, potentially.
In the same position. Like, I think they're going to give it 2 weeks before and then just see how it's looking and then decide. 2 more weeks of marathon stuff before they decide to maybe change it.
I'm happy to go in a bit underdone as well. Like, I don't think that, like, it's not ideal, but sometimes underdone can be better than overdone. I reckon I'll still keep, like, I'm going to reduce the double. I'm just going to take out a couple of doubles to get that difference between hitting 160 and 130s and still do like a marathon workout every second week, but maybe not kind of further than 32, 34K. But yeah, see what happens. It's all unknown, isn't it? I was here last week saying I was racing in Melbourne on the weekend. 2 days later, Melbourne was in lockdown. Anyway, let's thanks to Patreon supporters, eh? Kick us off, Croaks.
All right, I've got Nathan Hennessy this week. Nathan lives in Winoona, which is a suburb up there in Wollongong. He's run 1934 for 5K. Did scissor surf in 2014 in, 77 minutes. Got some good swagger on him. Saw in his Strava comments that tradies yell at him when he jogs. Maybe he got a few tattoos. Don't know which one is him. So there's a photo here and there's... three guys that all have tats.
Yeah, look how much ink they've got as well.
They got a lot.
Some good swag on those three boys.
But thanks for your support, Nathan.
That ain't your typical running group. I love it.
I hope it's here. I hope it's one of them's actually him.
Anyway, thanks. Which one do you hope it is?
I don't mind. They've all got mad swagger.
The one on the left with the mo, I reckon.
Yeah, he's got
the mo with the big.
He's got the smallest
spiderweb tat on the
kneecap, and then a skull on the other kneecap.
Yeah, in the middle of the middle of his chest to his waistline, there's a big tat through the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, gee, these are some hardcore fellas.
That'd cost a bit of money too, wouldn't it? Get all those tats.
These are the blokes that make running cool right here.
Yeah, that's it. Who are you thinking, Moose?
I have Mark Stodden. He is a member of the mighty Richmond Tigers AV Club, sitting in eighth on the Divi 2 ladder. 4:11, 1500, pretty good. 9:23 3K, 16:28 5, 35:02 10K, 1:15 half, 2:47 marathon at Melbourne in 2014. He ran a 400 in 54 and an 800 in 201 last season on the track.
It's pretty quick, eh?
That's his best result of all those, I think.
The track stuff.
The 54 and the 201.
Yep, I'd agree.
Do we think?
Yep.
Did the pacemaking job at Melbourne when they had to wear those massive backpacks in the heat. Ooh. 220, what was that, 2016?
The Sinead year, wasn't it?
16.
20, no, it was 2018.
What
was it?
2018, yeah.
It was hot in 2016.
I wore a backpack that year as well. Fuck me.
Do you remember those pace?
What? The day before the race.
Did his hand or something?
Oh, that was that day.
Yeah.
Right.
That was 2018.
Can you remember those pacing backpacks they used to wear?
Yeah.
They were massive. Yeah. Google it, Croaks. Anyway, I'm going to thank Nathan Jolliffe. Check out this fellas. Bondi Beach guy. He's got 28,000 followers on Instagram. And you know why? Because he won the amazing race back in season one.
Wow.
Yeah, this
season one.
Season one of Australia's amazing race. Yeah. He also was a runner-up on Celebrity Apprentice.
Shit.
This guy's a real big dog in the reality TV world.
We search for him.
34:57 10K PB as well at the Launceston 10K. He's only just started running, which is pretty cool. He's also a talented presenter, model, and creative. Also has a degree in graphic design.
Something tells me he's a very good-looking man.
Yeah, with those kind of things. Yeah, he's good-looking.
Blue tick. Oh, God, he is.
Good-looking rooster, isn't he?
Very good-looking man.
Very good-looking. If you're out for a run now, stop what you're doing and just type his name in. He's a what?
Patron.
Yeah, he's a Patron supporter.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm going to give him a like. I'm going to go back about a year and like something in his photo, see if that gets his attention.
No, he'd probably get that many likes. It wouldn't even pop up in his notification.
Yeah, true.
Thank you, Nathan, Mark, and Nathan, two Nathans, for your Patreon support. Thanks to all the people that make the show, keep it alive every week. We really appreciate it. All right, fellas, let's talk the Olympics. Do you want to start off with Pete Bowl?
Why not?
Wasn't this amazing to watch this one? He made the final. We spoke about it last week. He came fourth in the final in 1:45.92. He went to the front, led it probably until about 6:50 on the bend there. Fought on well, got passed by three people, but he had a real good crack. I was absolutely yelling at our TV over here in Echuca Moama and was up and about. I probably should have had some facts here about this would have certainly been the highest 800-meter result we've had at the Olympics for quite some time. Croaks, what do you think about it, getting up and about?
Yeah, I loved it. Like, in terms of our best, like on the track, our best male performance, like this would be it for sure. What I was really impressed with was he gave himself every opportunity to come away with a medal. And he just wasn't intimidated or overawed by the situation, which, you know, like Pete's been around for a while, but I wouldn't say that like he's a seasoned campaigner on the international circuit. And so it just didn't look like he had any nerves at all and just ran a super smart race. And I was really impressed with his post-race interview as well. Just such a down-to-earth guy. So that was like, I generally, like if I'm watching World Championships, Olympics, like the men's 800 is probably an event that I don't get up for as much, but this year I was super pumped for it. Largely because of what Pete had done, and you know, to break the Aussie record twice at the Olympics, and then to finish fourth is an outstanding result. So,
How good were the pictures of his family and stuff as well over there in Perth?
Yeah, it was cool. Just a great role model. And I'll probably say it a few times throughout tonight, but that's the one thing that I've loved about this current generation of track and field stars is they're just great people. They come across so well with their interviews and are just great ambassadors, which, you know, has probably not always been the case in you know, previous Olympics and previous generations.
It's always a good sign too when you go out in the general public. Like when I go to school and people start talking to me in the staff room, everyone just loved Pete Bowl. Like everyone just had the nicest words to say about him. Just the biggest fans of him getting around.
Mm.
Just loved it. Moose, any comments on Pete Bowl's performance?
Yeah, it was solid. It was reflective of his running in the heats, wasn't it? He just didn't quite have that last little bit at the end. He held on well, though. Held on well to get fourth. I thought he was going to end up back like eighth or ninth, just how it looked at about 80 metres to go.
Yeah, he was about to get swamped, wasn't he, by about four guys if there was another 10 or 20 metres.
Mm, it often happens like that.
Yeah, it does. Women's 15, next, Croaks. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, so I was pretty excited about this race just because there's so many storylines within the race itself. So in the semi-finals, Jess Hull broke the Aussie record and qualified, and then Lyndon ran in the second semi-final and also qualified, but obviously lost her Aussie record. So there was that question of, all right, who's going to finish higher between Lyndon and Jess? And then, you know, could Hassan win, which would then give her the opportunity to win three gold medals, or would Kip Yagan be too good, or would Muir beat both of them? So it ended up being that Kip Yagan won the race. Muir was second and Hassan was third. So it was one in 352, 354 for Muir and 355 for Hassan. And from the Aussies' perspective, Lyndon finished sixth in 359.01 and Jess was 11th in 402.6. So Lyndon got a little bit, she was towards the back early and looked like she was a little bit boxed in, but just moved through the field beautifully. And yeah, like that was another probably fantastic result. Like the only thing that would have made Lyndon's result better would have been if she'd got the Aussie record back again. But yeah, she was so close. It was a PB, so like to PB in an Olympic final is a phenomenal achievement. So
and to get that Canadian on the line, that she near one more step and she would have had her. She was fading big time.
Yeah,
would have been good to be fifth.
But and yeah. I think she would have had her. Like I just wonder if being boxed early like that didn't let her stick as close as she wanted when the pack separated a little bit, and then she had to expend a little bit of energy, probably, or was it like 500 out, trying to get back onto that pack. And if she had have got a bit of a clear run, maybe she didn't have to make that move. Jess certainly had the better ride going around 400 to 800. I thought she was out, and then I thought, oh yeah, she's the tactician here. She knows how to put herself in a good spot. And although she was only 3 seconds behind, it was quite a difference in how they finished, wasn't it?
Yeah, considering where they came from, if you get a freeze frame at two laps to go, where Lyndon was and where Jess was, and then you said there's going to be 3 seconds the other way here, would have been hard to believe. Yeah.
That often happens in 1500s though, and especially at a major championship where they've had to run heats and semis as well. You just don't know how much they've got left in the tank come the final. And you can sort of bluff your way through the first half of the race, but then that's when people really start to blow up if the heat and the semis taken a lot out of them, which is probably the case for Jess. You know, like she broke the Aussie record, ran a PB in the semi, so obviously didn't have quite as much left as what Lyndon did.
And because this is the first time they've both made an international final, would have this been the first time they've ever ran three at the one championships? Like Comm Games for Lyndon would have only been two, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess it would be. Yep.
NCAAs for Jess was only two. So, yeah, they're doing something they've never done before.
Yeah. And it wasn't Kip Yagan, like, impressive. She's so strong.
Oh, yeah.
It runs fast, but doesn't look like – she doesn't have, like, this massive sort of – massive change of pace. It's just this gradual just wind up, and before you know it, she's gapped them.
I was glad that she did beat Hassan, because only because it would have made him look not as good if someone coming from the 5K could then step down and smoke them all, just the 1500 meter people that are focused on that.
Yeah,
I don't think she got enough credit for her run, Kip Yagan. Like the focus was kind of on, oh, Hassan lost, rather than Kip Yagan beat her. And I don't think Hassan was tired by that stage. I think she was genuinely outclassed.
Yeah. And also Muir's been very consistent for a long period of time now. And so it was good to see her sort of break through for that, you know, international medal.
Women's 10K. Women's, and she had a good finish as well, covered all the moves. 10K as well, Croaks. We didn't have any Australians in there, but you want to quickly take us through the results?
Yeah, so this was now Hassan's opportunity to try and win a second gold medal. And, it was an interesting one. Like, they ran a lot faster than I thought they would given the heat. They were pretty much on, like, 30-minute pace, like, the whole way around. Gidde, like, did a lot of the leading, I guess, realizing that she had to pretty much run Hassan off her legs before it got to the kickdown. And you could tell with maybe three laps to go, Gidde was starting to get the shits. Like, she was sort of turning around saying, you know, it's your turn to lead. And it's like, well, this is an Olympic final. It's a race, so I don't really have to do any leading. And so there was Gidde, Gezahani, and Hassan. They were the three that were battling it out for the medals. Hassan was just too strong over the last lap. Gezahani ended up in second, and Gidde faded pretty bad, actually. She was obviously hurting sort of 800 metres out. So Hassan won in 29.55, Gezahani second, 29.56, and Gidde third in 30.01.
Yeah.
So that's,
and the pace started to slow too when Gidde was getting frustrated, didn't it? Like a couple of 74, 75s. Hassan just must have been licking her lips when that happened.
Well, I always reckon as well, like you, and I mentioned this to you boys, that although she'd run two 5Ks and three 1500s, coming, so yeah, there would have been some fatigue there, but coming back, coming from a 1500 metres back to a 10K, like biomechanically, like that pace feels so slow. So I reckon like she was just, she's looked so comfortable the whole way around. So it was an interesting race.
Certainly was. And though trying to go for that triple, having the heat would have definitely helped her as well, because people just couldn't chuck themselves, you know, really try to grind it out, because it was just cooking them as well.
Yeah. I don't know that she's out there in the heat more than others. So you got Gidde, who hadn't been out there. I don't think she ran the 5K, did she?
No.
So she was just a 10K, and same with Gezahani, who we haven't heard of for a while, who'd come out of nowhere, kind of. Hassan has been out there so often and getting up, and it's like, it's not just a physical thing, it's an emotional, mental roller coaster of having to get up for heats and then finish off and recover and eat right and do it all again. And
so, yeah,
everything and the pressure of having to do it. I don't think it's as easy as, well, it's clearly not as easy as what we think it is, but I wouldn't underestimate how much, yeah, like mental effort goes into that. But did you notice she is a brilliant racer, coming around 150 to go, coming up to passing, to lapping someone. She was sitting in second position, and she's gone past Gidde. Gidde's run up the back of the ladies that they're passing. Hassan has lane two wide open, rolls past, Gidde has to put the brakes on and then go out and go around. Like, that just worked out so perfectly for Hassan. And if you don't think for a second Hassan did that on purpose, then you're kidding yourself.
What about, I saw your tweet about it, like how relaxed, like she looks like she's about to nod off when she's on the start line.
Oh, she's from the Netherlands, she's from Amsterdam. You know, she just has some sort of brownies in the cool room, I reckon. Yeah,
she was very chilled out.
Last little relaxer.
That's what I imagine you look like, Croaks, when you're trying to get yourself up for Tuesday night workouts.
Sitting in the car.
The long hair.
He's on the ice pipe just in the car.
Men's 1500. This was going to be the highlight for all of us. I think we all picked this as the race to watch. It was fast. It was hard. We had two Australians in there, Stuart McSwain and Oliver Hoare, which was awesome to be able to cheer for two of them. And it was loaded. Jakob Ingebrigtsen was there. Timmy Chariot was there. I think there was three UK guys there. Josh Kerr was there, who obviously got the bronze in the end. And, it kind of went how we... Well, I thought Timmy Chariot would have went to the front and start off with, but he kind of put the brakes on off the line, made Jakob go. But then only sat in for about 400 metres before he went to the front and started throwing it down. Stewie jumped on the train as well. I think they were 56 and 55. And then it strung out. Stewie dropped off, just the two of them, with, what was it, about 100 to go when Jakob come around? 110, 120 kind of on the bend there.
Yeah.
Jakob put Timmy to the sword, and Josh Kerr kicked home. Best of the rest, I suppose, to get, nearly got Timmy as well, actually, on the line. He also ran 3.29. Tim Chariot was 3.29.01, and Jakob Ingebrigtsen broke the Olympic record, ran 3.28.3. Finally, a win for him over Chariot. and picked up the gold medal. Stewie came in 7th in 331.9, and Ollie Hoare was 11th, 335.7. Give me your thoughts on this one, fellas.
Well, it was a clinical performance. Ingebrigtsen is just the ultimate professional athlete. And
he's 20,
but you watch him race.
I know.
And he doesn't make a mistake. Like, aside from falling, so a couple of races in the past, he's sort of got himself tied up a little bit, stepping on shoes or finding himself in packs. But this Olympics, he has not made a single mistake. He's just been immaculate in his racing. And this was like the perfect race. You watch exactly what he does. He goes to the front. He needs it fast. But it wasn't fast enough that Chariot was happy. And so Chariot went around, and Jakob would have just looked at that and gone, oh, you fucking beauty.
Yeah.
And then when his change of pace, Ingebrigtsen's change of pace, off 329, 330 pace, to be able to just go around Tim, like Chariot like that, that's another level. No one can do that right now. No one except Jakob can change pace off that speed, and that's why he won a gold medal, basically.
Yeah, so impressive to watch.
You'd sense that, like, with 120 to go, like, he knew he had it. Like, that's where he's just like, yeah, might start going now. But, yeah, like, and I think it's sort of the Aussies, I thought they looked both a bit tired. Like, Stewie missed the start again, like, real bad. Like, took him eight. Like, something, do you reckon it's something he needs to work on? Do you reckon it costs him?
Well, it's just something expected now, isn't it? Like, it happens every 1,500. You just expect it, so you kind of don't notice it too much anymore.
Or are we maybe a bit harsh in that, like, you got to remember that these guys actually do get off the line bloody quick. Like, they're going through 100 metres, you know, 14 seconds or something. Like, it's off from a standing start.
Looks so slower than it is.
Yeah. So, but, it, you know, if you're giving the field that much of a start from the gun, like, it's definitely, you have to make it up at some point. I thought Ollie put himself into a good position early, a bit like what Jess did in the women's race, and then just fatigue, I think, throughout the heats and the semis. And you know, Stewie was there, and the same sort of thing with, you know, you said like the time gaps. You know, Stewie's there at 800, and he's ended up, like, he's still on 331.9, but it's, you know, 4 seconds behind these guys he was with it at 800. So
and we do know he's capable of it. Like, he did run the 329 at Monaco with those two guys.
Yeah. But to have two guys in the final, you know, is very rare for us. So it was a great result for both the boys just to be there.
Yeah.
And they'll be better, like, for the next major championship. Like, even Stewie, like, look where he's come from. Like, he's much more confident on the world stage now compared to what he was at World Champs in 2019.
Yeah.
He's gone up to a new level, and I think this will take him to another level for the next World Champs and Olympics.
And Games in there as well.
The best thing is they're only next year. Yeah. So there's 1 year now until the World Champs, and then 2 weeks later it's the Com Games. So, and you can, when you're a 15 runner, I mean, he could potentially go in and do 15 and then come out and do 5K at the Com. Like, he could do whatever he wanted. But there's a lot of running next year.
And talking about a lot of running, like, Stewie's been putting on a clinic since December 29th or 30th when he ran that mile down in Tassie. Like, he's strung together quite a lot of impressive races in 8 months. Really a bad one. Men's 5K, Moose, tell us about that one. I don't think we've spoken about the heats yet, so you might start with that.
Oh, the heats, yeah. Well, I'll talk about Dave and Morgan. So Pat Tiernan didn't show up for his heat. He obviously decided that his body wasn't ready to go again after his struggle with the heat in the 10K. Dave was first off. I thought Dave was really good. I think that, so Dave closed really well. He ran 13:39, but he was sitting in the front pack the whole way. And with two laps to go, it started to string out. And when one of the things with being at the back of a pack of like 15 guys is the difference can be about 4 or 5 seconds from when the first guy goes through to when the last guy in the pack goes through. And so in order to get into that auto qualifying spot, you need to pass 10 people. And you, those people that you're passing are the best in the world. And so you can close amazingly strong, like how Dave did. He was, he had the wheels at the end. He was running as fast as the guys in front of him, or even a little faster, but he was never going to make up that gap of 4 or 5 seconds with 800 to go. And that's sort of what happened. He finished eighth. I thought he ran really well, but just positioning wise, probably needed to be up about 10 more spots in his in the group.
Yeah, because we spoke last week, didn't we, how he got that big kick finish, but yeah, just gave him a bit too much of a head start. And then probably, yeah, as you said, he could have even ran quicker than some of those guys, but had to give him a start.
And look, I say that. However, look at who's getting through heats right now. That was one of the most stacked 5Ks ever. Plus, Stewie's running Australian, near on Australian records to get through. Ollie was running 3:33 or so to get through his heat. Linden had to run. Oh, Jess Hull had to run an Australian record to get through her heat. If you're not in near national record shape, you're going to have a really difficult time to get through your heat. And that means you've got to be in 13-minute shape, basically, to get through your heats at this level. Or maybe 13 to 13:10 shape. And look, if you're in 13:15 shape, then you miss out by a couple of spots, which is what Dave and Morgan ended up with.
Yeah, I thought, like, on paper, you thought that they're at best one, or like they'll get through on probably being like, you know, on time, just on how deep the field is. And both of them only just missed the final. Like, as you said, Dave finished eighth, so he needed to finish fifth to be automatic, because they ran a slower heat than what Morgan's heat was. And as you said, like, if he was up a little bit higher, then he probably would have finished in the top five, just because he closed as fast as all those other guys. And Morgan, as it turned out, finished 11th, and they took 10 through from that heat. He ran 13:37 and missed by one spot. So both of them were on the cusp of making the final. So they pretty much ran to what you would have expected, I would say.
And Dave put this, but Dave came in just behind Mark Scott, who ran 13:05 this season, also didn't make the final. Like, some good guys weren't making the finals. They were in that same conversation. So that was then won by Cheptegei, which was good to see him win this. Mo Ahmed was second, so Cheptegei ran 12:58.1. Mo Ahmed from Canada ran 12:58.6. And then, is it Paul Chalimo? Ran 12:59. Yep. So close finish there. And the fourth guy nearly got Chalimo. Did a bit of a dive across the line there. So that was an exciting final to watch when that rolled around. Good to see Cheptegei get the gold after missing it in the 10,000 metres. Mm-hmm. What else? Women's steeple. That would be the next one on the track before we head to the roads, wouldn't it? This is confusing tonight. We had Genevieve Gregson in there.
Are we just doing Australian races?
Yeah, not doing every race.
We did the women's 10K. Hey? I was wondering, we did the women's 10K. There was no Australian in that.
Oh, sorry, mate.
Oh. Yeah. I'm just wondering how you're picking what race we're doing.
Yeah, well, it's been a bit tricky. It's been a bit happening. All right. You tell me about Steeple Croaks.
So Jen, I guess she was probably in about 12th place going into the last lap. And, we sort of, a bit like that Pat Tiernan sort of situation where the winners have crossed the line and you're expecting Jen to come around the top bend, and she wasn't there. And then they go back and she's face first just at the water jump. So she's, ruptured her Achilles on that last water jump. So she pretty much laid face down, and the wheelchair came out and took her off the track, which is, really disappointing. It's a long rehab, and it's a tough injury to come back from, a ruptured Achilles. So I believe she's back in Australia now rather than doing like a quarantine at Howard Springs, she's managed to go to the hospital and get some treatment. So all the best with that recovery for Jen.
So wait, she's going to the COVID hospital. So she's in isolation.
Well, no, I think she's at the Alfred in Melbourne.
Yeah, I think going by Instagram, that's where she was.
Yep. Oh, so you don't have to do quarantine if you have a foot injury.
I think there's obviously a few loopholes, which Like, I don't have an issue with that. Like, you know, I think it would be a bit...
She'd be doing a COVID test every day, wouldn't she?
Yeah. It would be a bit inhumane, wouldn't it, to go and put somebody in Howard Springs for 2 weeks with a ruptured Achilles?
I don't think the athletes, like the runners and that, are going to Howard Springs anymore. Pretty sure they're going to a hotel quarantine now.
Where's Ali going?
Brisbane.
Oh, she's Brisbane.
Yeah, it's all. I think it changed. Yeah, look, it was interesting, Jen, I thought, because she's struggled with an Achilles for a very long time. And it's been the other side of the one that ruptured, which...
Hang on, someone just explain, because I don't know, what does rupture mean?
It basically, like tear. So basically where your Achilles attaches to your heel, that no
fully
longer
comes off.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, like it rips. And Kevin Durant had it. And he did it in the playoffs so he missed like 500 plus games of basketball, or 500 days away from basketball. That's how long it takes to come back. And obviously he's a bit more explosive of a sport. I mean, the steeplechase, probably the worst event for someone with a dodgy Achilles, because they're so springy and they've got to jump and they're explosive. But it's a very long-term injury. Like the rehab's 12 months plus at least. It's going to be a nasty one to come back from.
So they reattach it like with the surgery?
Yeah, surgery reattaches. And it's so much rehab because you can't load it. And so your calf and all that side of your body like wastes away because you have to try to load your calf again. And hasn't been used for so long. You're in a cast after the surgery. Yeah, it's horrid.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for explaining that. So that was an Australian wrap from the track, I think, fellas, wasn't it? Let's go to the roads.
Let's do it.
Let's start with the women's marathon, Moose. Saturday morning, you would have woken up. Did you sleep at all Friday night?
Yeah, well, I stayed up and watched the javelin. I think it was Kelsey Lee Barber came.
Oh, yeah, your mate from Doha. How many of these people did you know, actually, who were competing? Like, oh, yeah, I had lunch with them in Doha. Any of that stuff going on?
Well, not, like, I wouldn't count them as, like, my friends, but I may have had a conversation with them every now and then.
If you walk past her, like, if Kelsey Lee Barber was down the Surf Coast, like, on a holiday, and you walk past her in the street, would she stop and say good day to you?
No, she wouldn't have a clue who I was.
Okay.
Mate, she's a world champion.
Yeah. Yeah,
she's a world champion, and I was there for like a week, and then I'm out. So, but she was impressive. She is a clutch athlete. I really enjoyed watching that. I actually really enjoyed watching all the field and the jumps and the throws during this Olympics. But
yeah, I didn't mind it either. The field,
yeah, it was good. The road stuff was better, but I thought it was really like obviously Australians are performing really well, so it's nice. Brooke Stratton in the long jump and.
Nicola McDermott.
Yep.
Ash Maloney in the decath.
Yeah, that was cool to watch too.
Yeah. So the women's marathon went off. They started an hour earlier, which you kind of sent us a message the night before. It was pretty late by the time you sent that message through.
Crazy. Yeah. So Ali sent me that message. I was starting early and I was like, fuck, you'd be nearly in bed. And some of the athletes already were in bed. Like that, they would have gone to sleep without even realizing that the race time had changed. They had literally, this was crazy, I thought, to make this decision so late, like when they knew they'd changed the marathon location from Tokyo to Sapporo however long ago. They knew it was going to be hot. Historically, it's actually been upwards of 25-30 degrees in the past, so we knew it was going to be potentially that hot. And they've waited to the very last minute to change the time. I thought it was pretty harsh on the ladies. I know that everyone's thinking, oh, that's good though. They wouldn't have got in as much, like it wouldn't have been as hot because the sun wouldn't have been up as much. But there wasn't a lot of difference really between 6 and 7. The sun comes up there at like 4:30. So the sun was up and there may have been a, like 1 to 2 degrees temperature difference. But I think for the Australians who had done a good heat training protocol and who were maybe a little bit more conservative in their race plans, I reckon if it was like the later the race, the hotter the race, the more benefit it would have been to the Australians.
Okay, yeah.
Like when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's like, it's not like it's better for their welfare for sure. But it would have created a little more carnage, and it would have meant that I think that our girls finished higher up in the field.
Mm. Well, yeah. Do you want to tell us about a bit of a race recap, what you saw on the TV, what you've seen from the splits?
Yeah. So went out slow, went out like pretty slow, like slower than I thought it was going to go out at, considering that Bridget Cosguy was in there as a 2:14 lady. And there were a couple of sub 220 ladies as well. And so there was a large front pack, one that contained Sinead up the front, sort of second row back a lot of the time, third row back a bit. And it just started to drop ladies probably 10K, 15K, but still there was no stress like that I saw on the real, like the big dogs of the field. I'm going to pull up now. Just bear with me one sec.
Oh, Sinead's places. I've got him in front of me.
Oh, you got him in front.
Yeah, she was 36th through 5K and then 32nd through 10K.
Yeah, and so I think the pack was probably 50 deep at that stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even though she's 32nd position, she's actually 1 second behind first position. So this is – I saw this post and I'm like, oh, that's a bit misleading. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a big
like, she went from 36th to 10th, and you're like, wow, she was probably 1 second off first at that stage.
At that stage, yeah. And, I was slightly worried, not so much in where she was in the field, but her eagerness, it looked like, to be up front.
I was the same, Moose. More so compared to what the paces that Ellie and Lisa were running at those early stages, and knowing that there was going to be carnage later, I'm like, oh, like I hope Sinead like is feeling comfortable and hasn't sort of just got excited and, you know, and then we'll blow up later, which obviously she didn't.
She ran so strongly. Mm. It obviously so fit. So here are her 5K splits, 18.8, 18.9, 17.32. That was the one where I was like, oh, she's gone for it. 3:30s at that point is 2:27 marathon pace. And I think I said to you guys, I'm like, that's the winning pace right there. Like, that's the pace that's going to win the race. And I'm not sure Sinead wants to be running the pace that wins the race at the 15K mark. But turns out that she actually, like, it seems like she realized that, and she's dropped back and ran 17:54. She's gone through in 1:15:41 in 26th place, and then didn't get faster, really. So she's run 17:50, 18:03, 18:02, 17:54, and gone from 22nd, or gone from 26th at halfway to 10th overall. And I think this with hot marathons, history shows that it's not those that pick up the pace late that that win the race or that finish high up or go through the field. It's those that slow down the least. And that's exactly what's happened here with Sinead. She's just slowed down the least of everyone around her, which shows really that she was the strongest of the bunch that she was in.
And picked up 18 positions.
18 positions.
And even had a sprint down the straight to get into 10th.
And it sounded like by that interview, she didn't actually realise that was for 10th. She's just like, I was just trying to beat people and hoping it was kind of a good position.
It would have shown up on the screen as she crossed.
Oh, did it have their finishing position as
well? Yeah, it would have shown up just then, but you wouldn't have seen it 200 metres out. Yeah, you wouldn't have seen it at all. Yeah. It's just about, like, taking bodies at that stage.
She's so tough, like, physically but also mentally. Like, that was the one thing that I really noticed, like, the sessions I did with her in Canberra was, like, the end of that 4x5K where she was physically, like, working bloody hard and we gapped her and Collis is, like, calling at her to get back on, and she's, like, just able to do it. And it's just that, I don't know, like, we spoke about it last week, that elite athlete has that ability to go to places that most people don't, and she's definitely one of those.
I'll just read this out, Moose. Highest Australian placing in a marathon, I think it is female marathon. Probably overall for 33 years. Second best Australian female ever in the marathon behind Lisa Ondieki, who was second and seventh in the 80s.
I think Mono finished 10th at Sydney.
Oh, okay, so that just must be just females.
I reckon he's, yeah.
Yeah, and Deke was top 10 at one stage too, yeah.
Yeah, he was 5th at LA.
Yep.
So Sinead, like, he ran 2:31.14, and Bridget Kosgei ran 2:28 or so.
I've got him here. Jeptakir was first in 2:27.20, Kosgei second, 2:27.36, and Molly Seidel passed Guest, 2:27.46.
Okay, so you've got to imagine Sinead was in low 2:20 shape for this race. And
That was one of my points. Like, I hope the next race she does is a fast, miles around, paced, go break the Australian record, go to Berlin.
Her and Ali both, they both deserve a fast, like, flat time that that is indicative of their fitness or reflective of it rather than...
Because they've had three now, haven't they? Yeah.
You come 10th in the Olympics. I mean, that's something that you can... That's forever. That's a legacy.
Oh, yeah.
But to have alongside it, 2:22 Australian record as well, which, I mean, is well within Sinead's grasp. That's got to be nice as well, or at least have a chance to have a crack at it with some good weather.
Yeah, because what their last three has been like this hot one, London wet and windy, and then New York hilly.
Yeah, that's a long time ago now. You're talking like Ali ran her qualifier in Nagoya 2:26, start like March 2019. So we're talking 2.5 years ago. That's like, I know what she's doing. She's 4 minutes faster than that now. And it would just be really nice to be able to prove that.
Yeah. Did you, just the last thing on Sinead, did you watch her interview? Any tears?
Oh, brilliant. Fucking
hell. Wasn't it good?
Yeah.
Did you start tearing up?
Oh, no, I wasn't. No, there was no party. We were not watching anything. Well, I was by myself on the couch and the prison bars were up. But apparently there were a couple of fellas that were just bawling their eyes out at that interview.
Oh, we were starting to tear up here. When she started talking about her kids, like that hits different now that you're a parent. You might realise that soon, Moose, when your baby arrives. But you're just like I sometimes miss Hudson when he sleeps in, like an extra hour. She's been away from her kids for so long. I cannot imagine what that's like.
It was also, I think, what I, like, just her realising the sacrifices that her husband has made as well. Like, 'cause that would be a massive, like, not a burden, but, like, so much extra work for him to look after them all on his own for that period of time. I definitely started to tear up.
yeah. And then when she spoke about her family in Ireland and stuff as well, how her dad would be like the proudest person on the planet. Like, I was like, oh, that's so sweet. Carly said she listened to this old interview with her. It was on some American podcast, but she was talking about her husband, how like she used to go over to like AV races and stuff. And he'd be like, you know, the old like AV cross country races on the middle of a Saturday afternoon. And he'd be like, why are you doing this? Like, why? This is a massive sacrifice for our family for you to go and do these races. And then, that's like a stepping stone to where she's got to now.
I found actually watching the whole Olympics and seeing how much emotion there is throughout every sport, like just seeing that, like being a bit closer to some people who have made it now, obviously Ali, but then even sort of being around others that have done it, you can start to appreciate that what we see on TV is like, I'm going to use the skateboarders for an example. You're looking at like 2 45-second runs, right? They've spent 5 years preparing for those 2 45-second runs, and then all of a sudden it's over and you just start to see them like lose their shit. And like, I could, like, just being around others that have done that, I start to appreciate the investment and why they are so emotional at the end. And I look at the Olympics a lot differently this time around than I have in the past.
So dull. Yeah. It was just just watching it was just so different than past experiences. Ali Pashley came in 23rd position in 2:33.39 to be the second Australian female. Have to be stoked with this, Moose. Did you have a number in your head beforehand where you thought she might have came?
I didn't really, because I don't know enough about the other athletes and what they've been doing. But
still, you look at it and you go, look, there's three Kenyans, there's three Ethiopians, there's three Americans. That's at 9 pretty quick.
Yeah. If this race could have gone out really differently, and if this race went out like the men's race did, where they were pushing the pace earlier, then I think the finishing positions would have been different. I think maybe Sinead would have finished even higher and Ali would have come in the top 15 if the race went out like the men's. But it didn't. It stayed conservative, and what that allowed was other athletes in the race who may have got caught up in a fast pace to be able to be more conservative, and there wasn't as much carnage. Even though the event, even though it was hotter on the day, the pacing was smarter. And so, I mean, look at, so what Ali did, I'll just reel off her position at 5K. She was in 73rd position, and then 60, 61, 56, 52, 50, 43rd, 31st, 23rd, and finished in 23rd. And the most amazing thing about this was it's something that was prepared for. So this doesn't just happen. Like every single time that Ali's gone out running, I imagine, I know that she thinks about how she's going to race and about this one race. And this was the exact execution of everything that she's worked for. All the training she's done had led to hard finishes where she's allowed to work hard and push and hurt herself and find herself in positions that are really uncomfortable, knowing that's how the race was going to play out. And she just executed something like a two-year plan. She executed like with so much discipline, and what it took was her to put her ego aside and see a few girls run off up the road. And just to be able to sit back and go, you got this, trust it. And she trusted herself. She trusted something that she's never been able to do, which is negative split. So she ran a negative split by about 30 seconds, I think, which in an Olympic marathon in the heat, that's fucking incredible to do. That's
couldn't have been too many people who did that.
Not many, that's for sure. But that's like, she's so smart that she knew that if anything happened earlier, that she wouldn't be able to come through like she did. And you can see in her splits at the 30K mark, which was the plan that she had to be able to say, okay, you're allowed to go now. She went from 18:20 to 17:52.
Cool.
And she took 12 spots in that 5K. But what happened was she sort of reached her limit a little bit and she started really hurting. And so she ran 18:06 for the next 5K, and she still took 8 spots. We knew that was going to happen. That's how championship races have always played out, especially hot ones. But what was great about this is that she knew that she didn't leave anything out there. Like, I think if she had have been able to run 17:30 for that next 5K and finish fast, she would have maybe doubted whether she left it too late, her run home, and she was too conservative. So I think she's actually done this perfectly. Like, she was so in tune with her own feel of what she had left and what was sustainable, and she just managed to execute it just like two of the T. And 23rd was in the Olympics.
First one
off her history. Like, she's only run a couple of marathons properly. She's really only run like 3, maybe 4. So I think you're going to see big things still from Ali.
And good sunnies too. Must have listened to our chat about sunnies last week on the podcast.
God, we've given her some shit about
it. I thought they were good.
Well, she kept them on for the interview. She forgot she had them on. And now every photo has just got these disgusting shades. Hang
on, did she do an interview as well with Channel 7?
She did, but they just never played it.
Okay, because I didn't see that. But I did turn it off after Sinead's.
Apparently, her and Lisa were interviewed together as well.
Okay. And then Lisa Waitman, 26th, just 3 spots behind Ali. Is that right? Because there's a big gap between them. She was 2:34.19, so it must have been pretty spread out there.
Yeah.
This is Lisa's Olympic record. So 2012 at London, she was 17th. Rio, she was 31st. And 2008, she was 33rd. Now adds a 26th. So bloody consistent over 4 different Olympic Games. And they did a lot of running together, I think, Moose. The commentary was kind of saying.
Yeah, they did, actually. Yeah. They were together for a fair bit. Lisa took off in front. So Lisa went 18:18, 18:10, 17:50. So she had about 16 seconds on Ali at 15K mark, exactly 15 seconds, actually. And then at halfway, they were together. So she sort of went a bit earlier. Ali caught up to her, and at halfway, they stayed together until 30K, and that's where Ali went. And Lisa still maintained her pace really well. So this is Lisa's last five splits, 18:35, 18:20, 18:18, 18:25. So that's pretty incredible too, to be able to run that even towards the end. Like, that's big kudos.
Yeah, knows how to get it done. First time Australia's had three female marathoners in the top 30. So good to watch. So good to see. Any other comments there before we move on, boys?
No, it was good result.
What about Seidel as well, Moose? Your mate. 227 comes in third. I picked it 10K in. I sent a message to our group saying, Seidel looks awesome here. You were like, nah, she looks terrible. I'm like, oh, well, she proved you wrong.
Yeah, nah, I'll eat my words there. I was watching that going, I had people messaging me saying, oh, she, what's going on here? Imagine if she pulls it off. And I'm flat out like, she's not going to pull it off. It's not a fairy tale. Turns out she fucking pulled it off. It is a fairy tale.
The one thing that from the interview that you did with her, Moose, because you know how she had like so many injuries. Yeah. And I think one of the lines was like, I know how to hurt. I know how to run through pain, like, which she obviously demonstrated there. Certainly a skill to have. So because there's nothing conservative about her run. No. You know, she did so much of the leading and put it on the line.
Incredible.
You stop Puma's, Moose. I'm going to buy a pair now.
Are you?
Puma super shoes, yeah.
So you don't buy shoes. Mate, I know how tight you are. That's you ain't right. Spending your fucking money on shoes.
I've bought heaps of stuff off you in the past.
That is a lie.
I've bought spikes off you. I bought next percenters off you. So those Ekiden next percents, I wore those off you.
I was going to wait till after all the marathon chat, but I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on the super hot marathons at major championships. So we've had two now, Doha and the Olympics.
Beijing was pretty hot too, 2008. Yeah,
and so they set, like World Athletics now set these standards, you know, like 2:11 or so for men and 2:29 for women. But then they get to races where the athletes, there's so many more variables when you come to a super hot marathon. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is like, you look at the men's marathon and you've got guys that are 2:06 marathoners in the gutter after 10K. And it's just like, I sometimes feel sorry for some of these athletes that are 2:11 runners, but because of the conditions, like, they've had to qualify in a completely different environment to what they're going to race in. You know what I mean? So, like, what are your thoughts?
Well, then, like, you know it's hot from a long time out, and so there's adequate preparations. And Olympics is always summer. Yeah. Like, it's a summer games. And is this, when has it not been hot? Go back and talk through it.
But your point Croaks is making, I think, here is that the marathon at Tokyo didn't show us well. Are you saying it doesn't show us the best marathoners doing what they can do because the conditions don't allow them to?
Yeah, so I reckon if it was 10 degrees, Molly's probably not going to medal, which is a great thing. Like, I think the heat definitely evens the playing field. But when it comes to picking your, like, marathon team, I reckon they're better off opening up, say, every country can send three people. You run a trial in the same conditions that the marathon's going to be in. Don't set a standard of 2:11.
The US did. The US ran it in hot Atlanta.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, the qualifying time is really quite irrelevant.
Not many countries run a trial, though.
Yeah. No. It's quite irrelevant given the conditions they're going to run in.
No, it shows that the fitter athletes are still the best athlete in the heat, regardless of heat adaption.
And you got to be the smartest as well.
You have to execute a smart plan. And I don't know, Croaks. I think this is just part of the tradition of the Olympics. And I don't think you want to see like manicured conditions for the race.
Mm. Oh no, like I don't disagree with it. I just think it's disappointing seeing so many people pull out.
Yeah, which isn't that because their strategies are shit though?
Well, yeah. I agree. I think there's so many athletes that run poor races, like tactically, given the conditions, which like we spoke about last week, like pulling out at the Olympics, you know, we'll talk about Jack, and like Jack's got a legitimate reason, like Jack probably shouldn't have even started. But if you're fit on the start line, like you should be able to finish.
You got to remember though that a lot of these guys will be signing contracts for marathon majors in the next couple of months, and they haven't got paid for a long time. There's no money at the Olympics, and their agents also haven't got paid.
So I think it's I think it's also Australians just place different values on the Olympics than what a lot of other countries do.
Yeah. So there would have been a lot of conversations like, if it's not going good at 25K, pull out and we'll get you a big contract for, you know, New York, Boston, Berlin, London. Aren't they all coming up in like the next month or two?
Like one of the positives about having these sort of marathons is it is way more unpredictable and sometimes exciting to watch because, you know, Molly, for example, winning a bronze medal, if it's 10 degrees, then it's probably going to be like a Kenyan clean sweep, or it's going to be Kenya, Ethiopia, you know. But because of the heat, it just throws up that unpredictability.
Mm. Good chat about it. Men's marathon, though, we had three fellas there. Liam Adams finished in 24th position in a time of 2:15.51 after a smart race in challenging conditions. This is from Athletics Australia. Brett Robinson battled his way to the finish line in 66th position. And Jack Rayner fought just to get to the start line after a femoral stress reaction, but the pain proved too much on the day. But AA didn't put a time in there for Brett. I'll quickly look that up while you tell us about this one.
I got it.
In the results, Kipchoge Elliott, heard about him a few times before, he ran 2:08.38. Ngei from the Netherlands. I think he's from the NN running team too, isn't he? With Bashar Abdi, the guy who was third.
Yeah,
from Belgium. They ran 2:09.58 and 2:10 dead. Chirono, the other Kenyan, he was 2:10.02. But this was interesting, boys. You see this? Ngei just waving in Abdi, his training partner from a different country.
Yeah, he did it.
It was
he did
odd
it,
to
like,
watch.
Well, he did it obviously in the last sort of 100 metres, but he also did it about a K out.
Yeah.
Early on, I was like, what's going on here? Like, it wasn't until I realized that they trained together, but they're also from, they grew up in the same country. Where are they from?
Eritrea.
Were they?
Yeah.
Is that where?
Or Somalia. Okay, yeah. Maybe it's no Somalia.
Somalia. Yeah. And so that's why they were, you know, egging each other on, or one was egging the other on.
Yeah, the guy in second had it sewn up pretty easy. I'm like, come on, mate, you got to worry about getting to the finish line. He's just looking around trying to get his mate across the line for the bronze.
Yeah, imagine that, your silver medal spot. He must have known he had so much.
Yeah,
I reckon. Wouldn't you be so pissed off if you were Chirono that this other guy is like willing the guy in fourth to towel you up?
Yeah. And Chirono had done a lot of work too, like leading into that. And then because they crossed the line and saw Kipchoge, who's also in the same team as them, Kipchoge's getting hugged with those two fellas from different countries, and then Chirono comes in by himself in fourth and no one's cuddling Chirono.
Are you sure?
They're NN running guys, all those guys. Yeah.
No, I thought they were.
No, they're not.
No, they're with Mo Farah's group.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Mudane.
Yeah, 100%.
Is it Mudane or Mudane?
Yeah. They train with Mo Farah.
Definitely.
Oh, sorry, fellas. They're not NN.
Yeah.
No, you fucked that. Let's talk about Liam Adams.
Yeah, you talk about that because I want to prove myself right here.
You're wrong.
Liam Adams had a very similar race to Ali in that he started out conservative and he made his way through the field.
Truffles right here. Anyway, sorry, I'm correct, boys. NN running team. Google them. Sorry, Liam, I've cut you off there.
Liam got cut off by the commentators too at the end of the marathon. Not as bad as Brett Robinson, but not a lot of respect for the boys at the end of that race. Talk about that later. But so Liam's come through the field very smart, finished 24th, which is an improvement on him on his finish where he was 31st, I think, wasn't he, at Rio.
Yeah.
So he's run 2:15.51. I've got his split. Let me just pull up his splits for a sec because I got him here. So he's gone 15:47. Oh shit! No, I don't have him here. I can't do the math on that. At halfway, he was 107.05. So that's 2:14.10 pace, and he's finished in 2:15.50. So a slight blow up, but a slight. We'll call it a positive split. It wasn't a blow up, but he came through the field really well. I've got to get this. I don't know where my thing's gone. I had a list of what they're all there. Here we are. So Liam. Oh, dang it. No, I don't have it. Sorry. Apologies.
He did do it well, though, running through the field. He looked a bit shaky on his legs coming into the finish line there. But I think Liam just rinses himself every time he races to come in like that. Mm. And 2:15, like in those conditions, what was he? 4 minutes off, 5 minutes off his PB? It's pretty solid stuff. Brett Robinson did do a post about his stomach issues yesterday, fellas. I'm not sure if you read that one, but it's the same thing that's kind of got him at the last couple of marathons, isn't it? Feel for him.
Yeah. Let me go. Sorry, I found it.
Go.
Because this is real impressive stuff. Okay. This is very impressive stuff. So Liam's gone 82nd, 75th, 70th, 68th, 58th, 46th. 46 is at 30K, 39th at 35 to finish in 24th position. That is a close right there. That is someone who's come through the field while others are dying on the side beside him. That is impressive stuff to finish like that.
Yeah. Yep. Just read this from Brett's Instagram. At 28K, my stomach issues started to hinder me again. I literally get to the point where I'm jogging because the pain is so bad. My legs feel fine. My breathing is fine, but the pain in my stomach is nearly too much to handle.
Yeah, so it's a mechanical issue, like it's a biomechanical sort of issue, isn't it? He cannot take on carbohydrate. And so instead of absorbing it, it sits in his stomach. And obviously, I think it starts drawing water into the gut. And that's causing his stomach cramping. I believe that's what happened. That's what he's been tested for, and that's the result. That's why he struggles with marathoning, because he can't take fuel on.
So yeah, it's a shame because he's definitely fit. Like some of the sessions that he was doing in the lead up, you're like, man, he's ready to run something pretty quick. But yeah, if you can't fuel, you're in trouble for the marathon.
And that's a physical limitation right there. Like, there's nothing mental or there's no sort of weakness about this. This is something your body will not let you get through the obstacles required to run a marathon. And so I wonder whether it's better for Brett to run a career where he runs sub 60 minutes in the half multiple times, and he wins half marathons around the world, and he's a road racer without being a marathoner. Like, can that be?
You don't get to the Olympics running half marathons though.
He's still a good 10K runner too, though, isn't he? He could run
He's still about 30 seconds off qualifying for the 10K, so it's a ways off. He made the Olympics in the marathon. He can do it again. I just wonder whether it's going to be sustainable to be able to do that for his body, to keep getting himself up. If the risk is that this happens again and again and again, like how demoralizing would that be?
Well, he's run a good marathon. So it's possible. So, it might be the fact that they just need to train his stomach more.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a matter of training the gut.
You reckon it's like a genetic thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something like it is like how would you say it? It's not a like a disorder or anything, but there is something
like
wrong.
Like an allergy, like he's allergic to.
Yeah, but if it was, if it was real bad, he wouldn't have run 2:10.
Well, could he run 2:10 off taking on very minimal fuel? He probably could. A 60-minute guy could run 2:10 off minimal fuel.
Mm.
Does he want to be that sort of guy?
Yeah, well, and it also comes down to the type of marathon. Like obviously, a hot marathon, you have to take on more than you would in terms of fluids than you would in a cold marathon. Yeah. So he's obviously going to be disadvantaged in hot weather compared to cold weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a shame because, I thought it was a really nice post that he wrote, especially the bit about, like, he realises that he runs for more than just himself, like, for his family and his friends and the country, and, like, he feels like he's let people down, but it's certainly not the case. Like, he deserves to be there. He's in our top three marathoners at the moment, so, you know, he should not feel like he's let anybody down.
And he could have so easy walked off when he was running past so many people pulling the pin, people in gutters, stuff like that.
Well, you sent us that message, Moose, saying that came through from Ellie that, you know, Brett looks like he's really struggling, and that was quite early on. So, yeah, yep. Obviously at 28K, and there's still a long way to go in a marathon from 28K.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. Jack, he struggled with a stress reaction in his femur, I think it was his femur. I know it was in a really strange spot, and he had that a month out. So I think he had 10 days off running and then got back into some jogging and some cross training. But this is the Olympic marathon in the heat. I'm not sure whether his body was up for the day or not. Oh, well, clearly wasn't up for the day.
Good to start though, I suppose. You'd do it, wouldn't you?
I reckon you would. Like, someone was saying that today, like, oh, it's not worth it. And I'm like, fuck that. This is the Olympics. This is worth it. Like, it's not like he's taken someone else's spot.
No.
I'm on that start line.
It's too late to put anyone else in. Teams have to be submitted.
Well, they wouldn't have made it. No one else was qualified.
Yeah, no one hit the time anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Just get on there. Say you're an Olympian. Had a DNF. Better than a DNS.
Yeah. Yep, agreed. And, like, he'll come back. Jack's going to be a fucking star. He just has to get one right with the injuries.
Yep. Dan, what, any comments on Kipchoge?
Oh,
shit, eh?
Masterclass.
14:25 or something between 30 and 35K was just incredible. Like, the heat did not appear to hurt him whatsoever. His form does not change.
It
looks like he could run for 6 hours at that pace. Like, he's just so efficient. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And what about when he just tested him with, like, a 15:05 as well and, like, pretty much dropped the majority of the pack and then just chucked the 14:25 or 14:27 on top of that?
Yeah. He didn't look – I don't think I've seen him look as good in a race. Just the way, like, he's just so robotic. His gait and everything, it's just so in rhythm with it, like his legs in rhythm with his arms and his face doesn't change expression. And I thought I was seeing odds for him $1.44 before the start, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. Like, his last race, he got beaten by about four or five guys and he didn't look that great, and he's getting older.
And the one, like, at the airport, he didn't look that good in that. Like, he ran 2:05 or 2:04 or something. It wasn't anything special.
Yeah, then there's all these younger guys out here. Who knows what sort of shit they're taking?
Plus the heat. The heat, you know, it levels the playing field. And so you just didn't know how that was going to affect him. But
yeah, when it was him against the field, like, I think we all tip the field against him. When it's like, will he win, yes or no? You're like, nah, that's the best marathoner in the world going up against him in the heat. He's getting older. I'm going the field for sure.
Yep. And he just made us look like
fools. Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you bet against him? Look at his record. You're an idiot. Don't bet against him.
That's a wrap, boys. I'll give you some quick questions before we finish with the Olympics. Personal highlight, Moose, I reckon we know what it's yours. What is it other than Ali's performance?
Oh, of the Olympics?
Yep. Whole Olympic track and field program.
Kelsey Lee Barber chucking that bronze.
Oh, okay. Wouldn't expect that. Correct.
I know, yours? But I'm a fan. Oh, she... In Doha, she chucked that last throw of the meet to get a gold. And in this, she came into this over summer. She was barely making the team. She's been, like, she came from nowhere for this.
You're hooked.
I am. She's world class. And there's good story behind it, like, for this medal.
Yeah, okay. Crooks, what's your personal highlight?
Mine's not an individual event. Mine is just the depth of the Aussie team. Just how well we performed overall, which, you know, I haven't seen probably since like I don't think we even did that well in 2000. So it's been a long time since we've had like multiple finalists, and it just makes it so much more enjoyable to watch when there's an Aussie there to cheer for.
Yep, well put. Best performance from an Australian moose?
In the track and field.
Yep.
Just
running. Don't give me jump or anything like that. It's the running podcast.
Oh, I mean, Peter Bowl at four. I'm going to say Sinead at 10th in the marathon.
Yep, Croaks?
I'll go Peter Bowl just because to finish fourth in the 800, which, like, I'd argue that, like, the 100 and 400 are probably, like, purely, like, really global events because everybody's had a go at running 100 and a 400, but an 800 is still, like, super deep in terms of the countries that compete at it. And for him to finish fourth and to break the Aussie record twice at an Olympics is amazing. So I'll go that one.
Okay, good stuff, good wrap. We're going to whiz through the back end of this app, okay? We might cut that listener question for next week, but before we do, we'll say that for next week, sorry. Before we do that, let's review the New Balance Vongo Moose. Thanks to New Balance for sponsoring this episode of the Inside Running Podcast. Heard you talk about it on Shoe Geeks, but tell me a bit more about the Vongo.
Yeah, so I've had the Vongo for a long time now. I got it, maybe 6 months ago, 4 months ago.
Oh, geez, must be nice.
Yeah, it was. Normally, you don't like sample size and stuff's about a 9 to a 10 normally, and I'm 11 and a half, so I very rarely get shoes early. But I got a pair of these, and like, so essentially, I've been chasing this type of shoe for a while. The 1080 from New Balance has been their highlight in their range. The Fresh Foam X that they use is soft, spongy, it's pretty durable, really. And the 1080's had this nice little rocker, and it's a fun cushioned training shoe, but it used a really lightweight, flexible knit upper, and it's had some heel cup issues over the past few models that don't fit everybody's heels. Also find like it can be a little unstable underfoot because it is a little more rocked, and so the Vongo uses the same sort of foam but with a different geometry. So it's a little flatter. It's not quite as rocked. To me, it feels, well, it's broader underfoot, so it's flared, so you've got more surface area. The heel cup is traditional, so it's solid at the back of your foot rather than a like one of those kind of, what do they call them, like pixie heels or whatever. The upper, it's still a knit, a hyper knit type upper, except it's just a lot more like firm, so it's not as like flexible, so you stay on top of the shoe a lot more. They actually call it an engineered knit. Yeah, they used to call it hyper knit or whatever, but I found that it's a lot more supportive around the foot than the 1080. It may be not as fun. The biggest difference though is the medial post, so on the inside of the heel, just in front of the just in front of the heel towards the arch, they use a higher density foam. And we talked about that last week with the Kayano Light. This is a more traditional way of supporting the foot. You'll find that foam never compresses over time, and it's going to provide resistance for a foot that does pronate more. So that's the Vongo.
A bit heavier than the 1080 Moose?
Yeah, it'll be a little heavier. It's not massively heavier. Like higher density foam does tend to weigh a little more.
Yeah, that was my first impression. I thought it was a bit heavier, but then obviously softer.
It's not softer. Stronger heel cup with a bigger midsole. And when I say bigger, I mean like more flared with a stronger upper, as well as I think there's a little more outer sole on the shoe or maybe
there's
a little
more
bit.
Shoe, isn't there?
There's more shoe. So it is going to be a heavier shoe.
Did you feel the softer Croaks when you ran in it though?
No, like well, the way I explained it to you boys off air was that it was a more stable 1080 for me. So because I do so much of my running on the trails, I found with the 1080, largely it was because I guess there wasn't the medial posting, but also the upper was more flexible that, you know, because the trails, you're often on a camber. I definitely felt like my foot was moving off the shoe and you know, it wasn't always in a great position, whereas wearing this one, I felt a lot more stable on the trails and a bit more locked into the shoe. Yeah.
I made notes about that heel cup as well, Moose. Like, people are going to have less issues with that heel cup.
Did you notice the arch support, Brady, when you put it on?
I put it on in the kitchen this morning. Mm. And, that was the first thing I noticed. Said to Carly and Hudson in there. said there's something going on. I can never use those words to describe it like Moose just does. But yeah, that's exactly what I felt.
Arch support is a bit of a
You know what I mean, though, Moose? You can feel that. You can feel something in your arch that's sort of holding it up in a way. Yeah. Like it's,
your toe doesn't hit the ground when you got it on. Like it's just stationary.
That'll be the resistance in the compression of the foam you're feeling.
That's what it's
called. The true definition of arch support is an inner sole that is wedged or is firmer, providing like a wedge that you actually rest on. So it's more like an orthotic.
Come on, Brad, get that stuff right in future.
Well, it's just people think they need arch support, but they've been wearing like.
So they come in the shop asking for arch support.
And like you got to break it down a little bit and just say, look, no shoes off the shelf have arch support as such. It's more what's
going
on.
Sorry, I should have said that I could feel pressure underneath my arch when I put it on.
Yeah. That might be the firmness of the foam there.
Yeah.
Is the colours like meant to match the Olympics, Moose, the green and gold?
No, not at all.
Well, I liked it too.
The colours of it really match the Australian theme at the moment. Watching the Olympics, and you get to run a shoe that makes you look like you're representing the Olympics.
You can tell everyone. You can tell the Chukamoma Bowling Club you went to the Olympics. Yeah. They won't even check.
My Chuka Kia could roll that out too. Next meeting I've got there, I'll wear their shoes.
Got Olympian written on the side of the car.
Not a bad idea from you. I like that. Thanks to New Balance. What do they retail for, Moose, and who they are?
260. They're at the running company Ballarat, but I think they're also at other stores as well. Wouldn't know. I haven't looked.
Good. All right. Thanks to New Balance for sending us some shoes and supporting the Inside Running Podcast. Moose on the Loose. This is a long show, isn't it?
Gee, there's a lot that I could go through. We've had a big Olympics. But I'm just going to mention watching the coverage on Seven of the men's marathon at the end, right when Liam Adams finished, like there was very, very little appreciation of what he had just done over the last half of the race. I thought that it was skimmed over. I thought they were too concerned with patting each other on the back for a job well done, talking about how good they're going and how amazing their stories were. And there was actually no mention of Brett Robinson before they cut away, even though he was out there battling his ass out for his country on the course. The commentators decided to give themselves a rev up and basically high-five each other, and then it just cut away. And I was like, what the fuck? What about Brett? Well, you're not even going to mention that he's still out there, that he's still battling away? And then Liam's just done this, and you said, oh, and there's Liam in 24th. Good run from Liam. Like, seriously. You're not there for each other. You're not the fucking stars of the show, commentators. I thought that was like they were so obsessed with each other. It was gross.
I thought that they were probably it's almost like couldn't be bothered a bit, like a bit too tired, like because they would have had done that track stuff. They wouldn't have had much sleep, and then they had to get up to the marathon. And it felt like even the fact that they didn't have an expert, like. Because like they had Tamsin Manu, who's an 800 meter runner, Dave Colbert, who's a long jumper. And it was just like, oh, I'm sure Channel 7 looked at it and said, do we want to pay Mona or Deke? Or like I tweeted like even like Jess Stenson or Benita or like a Pat Carroll. Like, there's that many legendary Australian marathoners who could have been the special comments for that panel. I think Channel 7 probably said, nah, just put these guys on. They're doing the whole track and field. We want to save money. A bit of an afterthought kind of thing. This is the event over in Sapporo. And that's the way it really came off. Like there was a lot of like, reading, I'm pretty sure they're just Wikipedia facts about certain athletes in the field, and you're like, what is this? It's just random facts, and you're like, tell us stuff about the Australians. Is that where it comes from?
Everyone's got a profile, you click on it, and it comes up with stories and shit. It's not like, it's bloody easy for it to see that shit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I couldn't work out where that stuff was coming from.
Yeah,
I stayed on that stream, and a lot of people write in saying, oh, you should have watched the other stream. But I really stayed on that stream because I thought they were going to spend and give attention, like more attention.
Australian
Here's their splits as we're coming. Because in general, I thought like the whole Olympics coverage was pretty good, but I think the marathon got a bit unlucky, and they didn't have an expert on there.
The men's marathon in particular.
Yeah.
I don't think all of the blame should be on the commentators. I think partly it would have been Channel 7 saying, all right, the marathon is like, the marathon's finished now. We've seen the first Aussie finish. We're now going across to something else. Like I think the commentators would have happily kept commentating, but it would have been Channel 7's decision, not the commentator's decision.
It was the fact that they didn't even mention it as they were. They knew they were going. They'd basically wrapped it up, and they didn't even mention it.
I do feel like they sort of underestimated how good like Liam's run was. I definitely agree with that. That, you know, the day before it was like, oh, Sinead, great, you finished 10th. But if anybody finishes worse than 10th, it's not a good result. Like that sort of, yeah. a little bit of that attitude. Whereas, you know, 24th is still phenomenal in an Olympic marathon. You know, obviously Bretton 66th, like wouldn't be happy with 66th, but 24th is still at the pointy end of the field and you know, a competitive run.
Agreed. Yep. I thought that the track commentary was quite good, and I thought the field commentary was really good. Obviously, like, I went in with a hell of a lot of bias against David Colbert because he's on Twitter as a full-on dictator. Like, he calls him Dictator Dan. He's anti-lockdown. I went in with bias against him, but I thought his field commentary was good. But just the marathon commentary, no good.
Yeah, well, it's just because they didn't have an expert. They missed it. Like, he is an expert on field and gets super excited. I was the same. They had some good one-liners. Watching
so his, you know, they got Bogut in for the basketball.
I watched the cycling, had Scott McGorry on it, who won a gold medal in the Madison. He's commenting the cycling, and then you just like, and Gaze was in for the basketball as well. And then
surfing, they had Barton Lynch.
Skateboarding commentary was two Australian guys who just, I don't know who they were, but I reckon they're just diehard skateboarders because they knew everything. Yep, exactly. But then the marathon didn't have a marathoner.
We had a long jumper. We had Bruce, who, I mean,
would have any of them ran a marathon between them?
I think Bruce may have jogged
Bruce
one
would have month. Punched a couple, I reckon, back in his day.
Bruce is very like, you've got to love Bruce's passion.
But you've got to balance that, don't you?
For the sport, yeah.
Yeah. Bruce's job's there to be a commentator.
It's so like they were commentating.
He didn't have an expert comments person.
Yeah, there was, like, Colbert was commentating from the Docklands. Like, I asked Mona, I said, hey, are you commentating, Mona? No, I didn't even get a call. I'm like, fuck. Seriously?
So were Tamsin and Bruce. They were in Melbourne as well.
Yeah. I mean, how easy would it be to call? Like, Mona is the fucking gun at it. That's what he does. Anyway.
We did talk about doing a watch party, but it was, like, impossible with our kids and stuff. But next time we might see if we can organise something. But it is good to sit back and enjoy it as well, not having to worry about streams and comments and all those kind of things. Anyway, we're done. 2 hours, fellas. That's a big show. What's coming up? Don't know. Could be in lockdown again. Could be out of lockdown. The Olympics is over. Paralympics starts Tuesday the 24th of August.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've got a couple of weeks to get through, Croaks. See what happens in the world of sport. You doing anything special, Moose?
Back to work. End of lockdown.
Yeah.
Back to work. Love it.
Croaks, you doing anything?
No, very little planned.
Getting that booking in to get your jab?
Yeah, we're in September.
September? Well, you got to wait 3 weeks.
Booked in as well. It's 3-4 weeks, yeah.
Did you know Croak's had a haircut, Moose? Have you seen a picture of him?
Well, I haven't seen a picture.
You should see it.
Why?
It's pretty smart. Viv sent a photo to Carly, and Carly showed me.
Oh,
it's like that kind of like slick back, you know, the like, it reminds me of some of the blokes that used to hang around in year 8, you know, when they just push it behind their ears, but it only goes down to like their ears.
I basically put my hair in a ponytail and got Viv to cut off 3/4 of it.
Yeah, looks real like Backstreet Boys. Or Five, remember
Pity
that man?
The rest
Five
of him doesn't fit. Backstreet Boys with Fox hoodies and Monster Energy drink flat lids.
Maybe
midlife crisis.
Wouldn't mind going to bed. Thanks for listening. See you next week, fellas.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you again to this episode's sponsor, New Balance. With all the comfort and stability for you to run the distance, Fresh Foam X is New Balance's premium collection of their most elite fresh foam running shoes, which are available at select retailers and newbalance.com.